It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, it is Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward. Good morning.
Good morning.
So we enter into FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Hello to new listeners, old listeners. Glad to have you here. So Mike and I, before the mics were cut on, I got to hear. So Mike was took a little vacation. He also strayed from his roots that really bothered me. That he was. Now this is a very pro Baldwin County outdoor show, but Mike and I are Mobile County guys.
That's right.
Okay. When I heard that Mike was going to taking the whiz bang and taking it over to Baldwin County to station for a few days of fishing, I really didn't know what to think, Mike. I got to tell you, I was pretty worried about this.
But see, when I said Baldwin County, you thought I was going out of Orange Beach.
I did.
Yeah, but I didn't. I went out of Mobile Bay.
Yeah, but you went out of Fort Morgan. You're still in Baldwin County.
That's right. Yeah, but that's not far.
Hey, how's the ramp at Fort Morgan?
I did not put in at Fort Morgan. I put in at Dolphin Island. And ran the boat across.
Oh, you took the boat across. Okay.
Yeah. Now, I took my truck across the ferry.
Okay.
And just.
You're confusing me. So you went and launched on Dolphin Island.
I went to Dolphin Island, launched the boat, and I left my trailer at the friend's house.
Okay.
At Dolphin Island.
Okay.
And then my son took the truck over to Fort Morgan, and me and my grandson took.
Okay.
The boat.
Okay.
To Fort Morgan.
All right. Now it makes more sense.
A whole lot better than going all the way around, trailering the boat all the way around to Fort Morgan.
By the way, this is a side note. I hadn't told you about this. I hadn't told anybody, but it reminds me. So last week, I walked out. I had take a phone call here at the station.
Yeah.
Okay. And I walked outside, right? And our studios are here at Airport and 65. Now, this is just in the randomness of time. And I walked out and I looked out. And what went by southbound on 65? You.
Really?
I said, well, what are the odds of that my friend is going in the 2-minute window I'm looking out? So you did launch in Mobile County. Yeah. You did launch in Mobile County.
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And that just made it easy. So that all worked out real good.
All right. So we're in the middle, and we're going to talk, obviously, a lot of fishing on today's show. And we're counting down the days till Friday and the start of snapper season. But that didn't stop you from fishing. You had a few days fishing. Give us kind of the report, what you and I were talking about. What'd you do?
Well, I went fishing for wahoo. That's what I wanted to do.
Okay.
This time of year is a good time to go out and fish for wahoo. Well, I spent about 3/4 of my time going to wrecks and reefs and rigs and places that, you know, normally you could catch a wahoo.
But you get to those places and then you're trolling, right?
Yeah, then I'm trolling. Okay. Yeah, I'm trolling for wahoo. Did not catch any wahoo. Did not catch any king mackerel, which I was really surprised. We had a lot of good bait.
What's the water look like?
Beautiful.
Was
beautiful,
it?
Yeah. You get 15 miles offshore. It's just beautiful out there everywhere I went. And I went way offshore. I went all the way out to the salt domes,
which is
70 miles or so out. And the water's just beautiful. And the current was running real hard out there. But anyway, what I went fishing for, I did not catch. But we caught a limit of amberjack. Seems like there's plenty of amberjack out there. And there's plenty and plenty of barracuda out there. We caught lots of barracuda. And
you catch them when you're amberjack fishing or when you're trolling?
Trolling. Yeah, when we're trolling. You get too close to the rigs. And really, out way away from the rigs now. I guess there's so many of them out there, they just fall on the bait out away from the rigs. And one of the rigs we went to, man, there was so much bait on it, so many hardtails. I don't know that I've seen a lot of hardtails my life. And this is about as many as I've ever seen that was schooling on top of the water around this rig. There was just jillions of them. I've never.
Well, that's a good sign.
Yeah, it. That was a good sign for being off Dolphin Island.
Yeah.
And this was, you know, in 100 and something foot of water. So that was a
good
sign.
Y'all, I'm taking notes right now.
Yeah,
so he's got 100 feet of water. He's got a lot of bait on it. I'm interested.
Yeah, so that was a really good sign. But we did catch beeliners, caught a bunch of beeliners and triggerfish and scamp and, you know, some good eating fish.
Yeah, I want to go back through that. First of all, on the amberjack, because I've been amberjack fishing with you before, and, I mean, you've got a reputation for catching some big ones. What were
those? That was a while back.
But. Yeah, well, yeah, you still did. Listen, last time we all went, you and I and Bobby, yeah. Still big ones. What were the size amberjack?
They were around 40 pounds, I guess.
Big, good amberjack.
Yeah, 35 pound, 40 pounds. So, you know, good amberjack. Good eating size, I guess.
One of those that I, you know, once they get over like 30-something, then I catch one and they go, yeah. I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good. That's all I need.
Well, it's a lot easier nowadays, Sean. We got bent bud rods.
Yes.
Two-speed reels.
Yes.
You know, so you can stick it in a rod holder, and you can stand up and fight them if you want to.
I have fought them more than once so many times in my life with like a 4-0 stuck under my arm.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. And you get through, your arm's bruised.
Yes, and that's the last one you want to catch for the day on that. Yeah, if you got a bent rod and you're putting it on, you know, low speed, you know, putting the traction on it.
Two-speed.
Yeah.
You know, so... they're not as hard to catch as they used to be. But anyway, had a good time doing that.
How about the beeliners? Were they, where'd you find them around rigs or live bottom or where?
Live bottom. Yeah, caught them around live bottom. And we could have caught plenty of them. It was getting late, though, because I spent most of the time, like
trying
I
to
say,
find wahoo.
Trying to fish wahoo.
Yeah.
I just knew I'd go out there and spend a day. I'd catch a wahoo and some kings, probably. But anyway, wasn't any of them out there.
Have you been hearing any reports that somebody is catching kings and catching wahoo, and you just hit it wrong? Or?
No, No, I didn't. I haven't heard of anybody out there catching any, but I just know from experience in the past that this time of the year you can usually go out there and catch them. But I tell you something that is totally different than what it used to be. You know, years ago, I used to fish the billfish tournament, you know, and I'd go wahoo fishing in the billfish tournament years back in 2000, 2005 or whatever. But we had lots of options to fish out there. There was hundreds of rigs south of Dolphin Island.
Right.
You know, so we had lots and lots of options to fish for wahoo out there. Now, there's just not that many options. We left Dolphin
Island. And the wahoo are out there. They just may not be – you just don't have a structure to fish around.
Yeah,
it's kind of a needle in a haystack.
That's right. And the structure also made them stay around here, too. You know? So things have changed on that. And the king mackerel's the same way. There's just not near as much standing structure, plenty of underwater structure, but where a majority of the people that like the king mackerel fish around hard standing structure, there's just not as much of that out there. But anyway, you know, you're leaving Dolphin Island and you go to Salt Dome, you pass by about 4 rigs.
Yeah.
Used to, you'd pass by 20.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So things have changed a bunch out there. But the good report, there's plenty of amberjack. There's plenty of beeliners, it seems
like. And you said you caught some scamp, too.
Caught some scamp and triggerfish. And, of course, plenty of sharks.
Yeah.
No problem on the sharks, either. There's lots of them.
They're still there. What about snapper? Did they get in the way?
No.
You're too deep?
We caught a couple of small snapper. That's all. But that's it. No, I didn't fish for them. But
well, yeah, but there's know, a yeah. Mike. Yeah, Mike, norm, there's a lot of times catch, I'm not yeah, fishing for right. them either, and they
that's right.
They get on board.
That's right. I wasn't fishing my snapper spots, but no, we did not catch. But just we did catch a couple small ones, and I say small ones. I say you know, 3, 4, 5 pounds.
All right. Speaking of snapper, we come back. Of course, that is opening up on Friday, and Director of Alabama Marine Resources Scott Bannon joins us in the next segment. We'll talk about that with him right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you all along. And, I mean, a man that got to go fishing. I'm a kid wishing to go fishing, which I'll be doing very soon.
Till you go back and fill the gas tank up.
Well, that's...
It's fun while you're out there.
That's right.
And then you cry when you come back to the pump.
Well, that's why that for the first time ever, as I come back in or head out from Dolphin Island, I will be worried about a Coast Guard check that looks down and goes, how many, nine people, your boat can only carry 9, Sullivan. You got 16 on there. So, talk about this as well with Director of Alabama Marine Resources, our friend Colonel Scott Bannon. Hey, how are you?
I'm good, guys. Welcome to summer.
Yeah, absolutely. It's now really with what's coming up on Friday and the opening of snapper season, it's gotten real. Even though plenty of people have been fishing, great, you know, great stories, Mike offshore. Captain Bobby talk about speckled trout fishing. He said this may be the best May he's ever seen, you know, for signs and numbers, which is incredible.
That's saying something.
I've been at the house.
I use my scientific meter social media, and the trout and the flounder. The flounder have been astonishing. Social media and the people that I've spoken with. I think we're hopefully beginning to turn the corner on that particular species. Everybody likes flounder, you know, so it's we've seen tremendous pictures on that, and again had very positive feedback. So we're hoping the future is bright for that particular fish.
Yeah, we might circle back on that. I do want to talk about, you know, inshore species as well, but do have to talk about the fact that here it goes. It's the big, you know, I see the checkered flags waving and folks getting ready to go snapper season 2022, getting ready to open. Y'all's perspective at Marine Resources, give us some, where are the superlatives? What do you expect? What's our tonnage this year? Any kind of things that people need to know before they go out? All that
sure.
kind of good stuff.
So we're going to fish to our 1.12 million pounds, which we've done for the last couple of years. The National Marine Fisheries Service has not made any adjustments yet for some changes that have occurred at the council and the what we call the SSC level. So there are some potential changes coming down the road that might bump it just a little bit. But for now, that's what we're going to target, is the 1.12 million pounds, which last year took us through the end of the year because effort dropped a little bit because the weather kind of got us early in the season when most of the people have the opportunity to go. Then we got into the later part of the year. It's always a little bit of a struggle to fish quota late in the year. But lots of opportunity, and lots of people went. But it's I think it's going to be a good season. I think we're going to see, if we get fair weather, I think you're going to see lots of opportunity to go. There's a little bit of a change this year. There's a federal requirement for you to have the venting device, which is like a hypodermic needle, or a descending device on board your boat, rigged and ready to go. And so that's a federal requirement. Our guys will be checking for it. And you can get one free by watching a training video at returnemright.org. And the training is great. It shows you how to use the venting tool, shows you how to use the descending device, which is a great tool to lower that fish back to the depth at which it was caught and helps counteract the barrel trauma. And within about a week, they will mail you the 3-pound weight and the descending device to your house. So it's a great opportunity to get one of those for free.
Yeah, it's been a change. You and I talked about this at the boat show. So this is, you are legal if you still have the regular venting tool that most of us have had on our boat. But this is a high fancy. Scott, this is a high fancy return.
It is. The one is adjusted for the depth. The other, they send you two of them. One of them is like, looks almost like a great big safety pin, and you hook it through the fish, through the wherever the hook went through or through the mouth of the fish, and it lowers it back down, and then you turn it and it releases the fish. Again, great videos on there. Even if you don't want a descending device, it's a great educational video on discards and on how to manage discards in the reef fish fishery. So. I would recommend people go there and at least view the video. It's about 10 or 15 minutes, nothing big.
Bringing that into the system, adding that to vent tools, does that, when you go and discuss tonnage and going forward, does that help? Is that part of the discussion? Say, okay, now we are using these devices, so therefore there's less mortality and release? Or, I mean, how does that play into the bigger
potentially
picture?
So dead discards are considered in the quota that is consumed, and when you're doing these assessments on how many fish are out there, how many fish are taken from a system, and part of that is how many die because they're discarded. So there are some statistical figures for that, and there's some studies that are focused on that. And there will continue to be studies, especially now, if you can return more of those fish to where they don't float on the surface. So floating on the surface, it's going to die. Returning it to the depth at which it was caught or something close to it is going to give it a much better chance to survive and help it get away from the predators that may be down there waiting on it. So it gives it they seem to swim away very rapidly. So dead discards are a part of the research, a part of the fishery, and it is something that we do have to be concerned about.
Is it just floaters that go into that conversation, or is it the fish released and I saw it swim down, you know, 30 feet under the boat, and then I watched the dolphin eat it, or I watched the shark eat it, you know?
There are some studies out there that are focused on those, the predators, i.e. the sharks and the dolphins, And we've added some questions to our survey that the survey staff will ask you at the boat ramp. And oftentimes we'll ask a question or two about, did the sharks get you? Did the dolphins, you know, get some of those fish? And we're trying to bring that kind of data together. There's been some meetings on how do we address these predators, the sharks and dolphins. They are they've done a very good job of being conditioned to finding that fish that you're returning or that fish on your line as it's coming up. So it's frustrating. It's frustrating to everyone. I know you guys have experienced that yourselves. Anybody that's been out there has experienced that.
That's right.
And it may ruin my plan. My plan for paying for gas this year was half the people on my boat, I would sell them a dolphin tour. And then the other half of us would be snapper fishing. And the dolphin tour people would help, you know, pay some of the gas money out there.
That would contribute to what we call user group conflict. One group would not be happy with the other group.
Is there any study on venning the fish and the ones that survive after venning? Is there some kind of study on that?
If they're vented correctly, they survive very well from just the having been vented and returned to the water. As long as you don't spend a whole lot of time with them out of the water and handling them and those things, the quicker you get it back in, the better. And remember, most of this barotrauma occurs in a little bit deeper water. A lot of our reefs and things are in about 60 feet of water, and if you reel at a fair rate, you know, you generally don't see that, you know, the bloated stomach coming out of their mouth. That's the stomach. That is not the air bladder. Please do not poke that. And so if they're vented correctly, they usually swim right away. It's not a challenge. Now, again, if a predator gets them, that's going to be no matter what condition that fish was in. But if it's vented, then it does not it's not going to swim around on the surface. It's going to swim away immediately.
Yeah, you know, it's something I've noticed too. So depth, obviously, is a big part of this. And, you know, like you're fishing bridge rubble, usually it's not an issue.
No.
The thing that also has helped, just raising children, fishing with me and all these, less issue with the children because it takes them longer to get them up. They reel them slower and they're not trying, you know, and they don't have the strength to get them up. It's just something, this is anecdotal. I don't know if there's science behind it, but at that pace, I rarely, when we're fishing shallow, if my kids are catching one, I rarely have a,
The adults, you know, have a tendency to want to reel faster. We have the excitement of the child, which is good, but we have a tendency to reel a little faster. And so bringing that fish up rapidly is part of the challenge. It's the same thing with humans. You know, if you do that to a human, it's a problem. And so if you come up at a slower rate, then the barotrauma that would occur to a human is different. So it's, that does play a factor into that, but so, you know, we're trying to do whatever we can to maintain this healthy fishery. And you're going to see, we've talked about this before, on average, you're going to see a little bit smaller fish. We have some data going all the way back to 2014 when we had single-digit seasons of 9 days and things like that. You were catching bigger fish because you were only fishing a few days a year. So our research shows that you've now caught a lot of those big fish, especially in close. We still have an abundance of fish. They're just not as big. You've caught a lot of those big ones. It takes time to grow really large. But we've seen over like the last 2 or 3 years a very consistent size of fish, and it's dropped in average from 2014 to the average size was probably about 23 inches down to about 21 inches. But the length, the different lengths, those bigger fish, you're just not seeing as many because most people don't. They don't know how to fish for some of those bigger ones.
Right.
They don't go to the locations where they catch those. But the stock is fine. We do our own research. The University of South Alabama and Dr. Sean Powers and his crew do an amazing job, and they provide that data to us and said, you've got plenty of fish. You're just going to see these sizes, the just barely legal size and bigger fish.
Now, it's a good thing to point out to people who haven't been fishing snapper. Yeah, maybe they started in 2014, right? Those folks. Because it might well be on me, but even with me, when I started snapper fishing, our average fish was nothing like the size of, you know, the fish that we catch now, let alone in 2014. So I saw it go, and I saw that fish size, average size, come up and come down, you know, with what we've been doing. But if somebody hadn't, if 2014 was their first year, they might have thought it was always like, you know.
Always going to be a trophy fish.
Yeah, and those snapper, it's blown me away, not to get into Sean Power stuff, Dr. Power stuff, but the longevity, there's some of those big sow snapper. Those are some old fish.
Yes. We have ear stones or otoliths from some that are 50-plus years old. So they can live a long time. Yes.
Man, that's unbelievable, isn't it?
No wonder they can say, I see the hook inside that piece of pogie right there, and I'm not eating it.
I'm a learned fish.
Yeah. And you mentioned the venting and venting tools, like most, and you know, the old-fashioned venting tool. Doing it correctly. Number one, that's their stomach, not their air bladder. But can you describe to us, and then I know that I've seen some videos online. Is there anywhere that you would send people before they go to know exactly where they need to come in to that fish?
ReturnThemRight.org is probably the best place. You can go to YouTube and see a 1 or 2 minute video. The Return Them Right just has so much more information and shows you what happens when you vent, shows you what happens when underwater and using the different devices. But basically, it's laying that pectoral fin down and venting just behind of the pectoral fin where you're going to hit the air bladder. And they're going to show you where that line is in the fish. They're going to show you a graphic that says this is where the different organs are in there and help you get a better picture of why you're doing it a certain way and what the benefit is. So it's, again, it's a good video. It's only a few minutes long, and you can receive the free stuff at the end of it.
Yeah, so it's Return M, like E-M, versus them, ReturnThemRight.org. And I'll try to get a link up here on our social media platforms as well for people to check that out. Maybe when I post the podcast for the show, we'll link it.
And don't forget, this opening weekend, just so happens Amberjack and Triggerfish will be open, and so you're going to get the trifecta.
Yes.
So that doesn't happen very often. That's the unicorn of reef fish fishing right now. So.
No, it's a big deal. Now we just got to get the right weather. And more of that to talk about when we come back. I do, again, like a minute here. Reef fish endorsement. Remind folks about that.
Yes. The Gulf Reef Fish Endorsement is required for every angler that's 16 years of age and older, even if you hold a lifetime fishing license or you're above 65 or older. It's $10 for residents, $10 for non-residents. We're not trying to make money. We're trying to define the world of fishermen, and we use it to work in the reef fish fishery. And your saltwater fishing license and your angler registry is free if you're 65 or older. So please help us participate in those programs. And if you're surveyed by one of our staff at the dock, that does not count as your snapper check reporting. Please do that when you land. Go to OutdoorAlabama.com, download the app, the Outdoor Alabama app, and report. Triggerfish, Amberjack, and Red Snapper are all required to be reported.
We're going to pick that up on the other side of the news. Coming right back with Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, our guest right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. All right, just a reminder, checkered flags on Friday.
Yeah.
So don't get started, which I didn't even get into with the director here. Welcome back. It's FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, our guest. Yeah, I want to revisit because I got tight there at the end. Two things. Number one, just if you vent the fish properly, go watch the videos, but if you vent that snapper properly, you do get that fun sound.
You will hear the sound of that air rushing out, and that is the sound of success for that fish and survivability for that fish. So
when you hear that sound, you done it right.
Yeah.
And a couple other things you mentioned, of course, getting if somebody does not already have the Outdoor Alabama app on, they do that and then go to Snapper Check through there.
That's correct, and that is how we monitor the quota. And I promise you, you and I have talked about this over and over again, do not think that if I just don't report that helps. It actually does not. We're going to make an estimate based on our landing percentages and different things. So real data is the data that you give us. And so the more real data we get, the better the system works. So please, we've been blessed to have this state management system for the last several years. That's the reason you were able to fish the numbers of days that you have, and so it's a big part of what we do here.
And don't forget, you have to report your amberjack and your triggerfish and snapper.
That's correct. Because yes. those other two species are species of concern to us, and we want to make sure that we get great information from Dr. Powers on the abundance out there. We'd like to see our numbers compared to the federal numbers, because sometimes they just don't always align in some other species. So we'd like to keep a good eye on that and develop our own accounting for those species that are important to the anglers of Alabama.
Yeah, let me circle back one more time here, but I don't want to belabor it too much. But as the discussion goes, and I get challenged with it a lot, people listen to this show, they say, Sean, you're all on board, you know, on the snapper check, this and that. This is going to be used against us. I don't know why you're always for this. It's going to be used against us. I mean, is the easy way in the Sullivanese method, if we don't report, it's not like y'all are going to just say, okay, keep fishing.
Correct. Yeah, we develop an estimate based on the what we feel is the percentage of or the percent of people who've reported. And that's based on our surveys, our staff surveying at the docks and at the marinas. You're going to see them. So we have an idea of how many boats are coming in. We've used a camera system to mm-hmm. monitor how many boats come in, and we've made estimates off of that. So we have a pretty good track record for understanding the effort. And it is much better and much more realistic than the effort data that we have received from the federal government. That's why we do it, and that's why it's important to you to get real information. The numbers that have come from the federal government in the past on how much effort, it's not realistic. We physically can't put that many people on the water in a day, and so then that inflates the landings numbers. And so our goal is that we're as accurate as possible. And as long as people continue to participate, we're gonna work very hard to give you as many days and many opportunities as we can to go catch these fish.
It's not only participation, it's a law.
Yes, it is a requirement. You will yeah. receive a ticket if the enforcement
right.
has it.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And, yeah. and we reinforce, but at the same time, I get this question a bunch. And, you know, why am I, you know, and it's this idea that first of all, I mean, it's the argument to be made with the real data to challenge. If people haven't paid attention to this over the decades, the feds used to say whether it was a tropical storm or a mill pond day, the same number of people were fishing, catching the same number of fish.
Correct. You know, so Mississippi has an argument that they fished 3 days into a wave. A wave is a time series that the federal government uses for their survey data. They only fished 3 days into that wave, but then the number is extrapolated across that whole time series. So instead of the couple of hundred pounds of fish that was caught, it's extrapolated out and becomes thousands of pounds of fish, and that's not accurate. Whereas they have the scales, the tails and scales, which is kind of a juiced up snapper check, a very accurate system. They know those fish. They know who's out there, and so their data is very, very accurate. And so that's why these state systems and even the state surveys that Florida and Louisiana do are much more accurate than what we were getting across the board. And there's a little bit of small state bias, I think, in those surveys. That's a long discussion.
Right. And the option to not doing this, number one, like Mike said, it's the law. But the option to not doing this is not that you just keep fishing. It's, you know what I'm saying? I think people, when they compare it in their mind, they're like, why is this a good thing? They don't realize that this is better than what the option would be. If we didn't do this, it would be restricted more.
Yes. Since we've been doing the state surveys and state management, you know, we've been in the 40 plus days a year. Again, last year was 124 days because we're not going to close until we've met that quota, even based on the reporting rates and everything else that comes into play. So work with us. We're working for you. That is my job, is to work for you as the angler.
All right, let's talk about the next part of this process as we think about the checkered flags. We got to launch our boats, you know.
No, so, we got to park our boats.
You got to park the trailer.
Got to park the trailer.
Yeah, we launch the boat, then park the trailer. The state of the launches address coming from Colonel Scott Bannon. Where are we?
Boat ramps and red snapper are two things that keep me awake at night. So across the Gulf here, let's start. In Bila Battery, we made some repairs to the ramp for them last year. Next year, they'll probably start construction on the first-class boat ramp in that area. But on the snapper weekend, you'll see 50 or 60 trailers. It's a 10-mile run to the Gulf. Great place to launch. There's a bait shop that's out there now. So if you live in West Mobile, go launch in the bayou and shoot across there. On Dauphin Island, Little Billy Goat Hole has new docks, and it has a new parking scheme. They're paving it. They just paved it this week. So it should be up and running. They're going to do some bulkhead work, but that should not impact the use of the ramp. And they've increased the parking around at the end of the fort for just single cars and things, so a lot of good stuff there. Dauphin Island is also building the DeSoto Landing. Everybody knows the landmark of Circle K. When you come onto the island, you see the Circle K, turn right. Down on the right-hand side at the end of the road, there will be a new boat ramp that probably will not be ready for Memorial Day weekend, but will be ready very soon after that. Great access to the Sound and even access to the Gulf.
How many boats and trailers?
I'm not sure. I think they're going to the initial one is going to be about 30 parking spots, I believe, for trailer parking spots. They have to take down some fencing and do some work there. And they also have some additional property that they may turn into parking down the road. And then Big Billy Goat, as we like to refer to it, we're going to begin. We're working a project with the town of Dauphin Island to improve the parking there, removing some there's some popcorn trees that are an invasive species that need to go away. We're going to remove some pine trees, and we're going to replace those across the island. For every tree we cut down, we're going to replace it with two hardwood trees. But clean up that parking and make it safer and more efficient. We're going to change the way single-car parking is done down there. We're going to improve some lighting. We're going to put in an elevator at the concession stand to make it ADA compliant. And hopefully, by this winter, we receive the Corps of Engineer permit to tear out those docks and the ramps and rebuild those and make them much more efficient, much safer, and make that just whole area an improvement. We opened the Pines boat ramp. If you're a Fort Morgan resident and you have a small boat, that's a very popular location. We did some work there. The Fort Morgan ramp has become extremely popular for folks. And then Boggy Point and Cotton Bayou are always a little bit tight for the parking.
A little bit tight. Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
But the launch, I'm a big cheerleader for the launch, and they've run into some challenges with the placement of the docks and the angles, and they're redoing that. That's a Baldwin County ramp, and so they're making some corrections to the angle of the docks over there, making some improvements. Their goal is by Memorial Day weekend that most of it is repaired, and by 4th of July, all of it is repaired. So, but it will remain open. It has about 200 trailer parking spots, easy jaunt out through protected waters to get to the Gulf of Mexico. You don't have to cross the bridge. You don't have to get into Orange Beach traffic. I would encourage people to consider using it. It's a beautiful facility, great restrooms, areas for you to go picnic if you would like. And so we're boating access is a challenge. We're going to work to improve some of the launch at Weeks Bay at Big Mouth or Viewpoint, whichever you want to call it. One of the ramps is damaged. We hope to have it repaired within the next 2 weeks. And over the course of the next year and a half, I'd like to redo those ramps, redo some fishing access, and restripe that there for more efficient parking.
A couple things. Number one, I'm just picturing two pine trees in particular at the Goat Hole, at Billy Goat Hole, Big Billy.
Big, yeah.
Yeah, that'll be...
I think we have slated 31 trees to be removed.
My man.
So, now,
that's going to be.
I think we're going to gain, and we're going to make it much more efficient. You're going to put more single cars down there. You're going to meet the needs of the vendors that are down there better. It's going to look better. It's going to be safer. We're going to try and get as many out of that median as possible. And then with the additional parking down at DeSoto Landing and the improved parking at Little Billy Goat, I really look for good things here at Dauphin Island to improve that because, again, a lot of people are trying to go fishing, and we want them to go. We're working with Mobile County. They bought Cedar Point Fishing Pier.
Yeah.
They have the property on the east side. We've been in discussion with them about what are some designs to put a ramp in up there with about 40 trailer parking spots.
That'd so be great.
These are all great things. Commissioner Randall DeWitt has been pushing for that, and then the governor has provided lots of funding to the south part of the state with the Gomesa funds to support the fishermen and the anglers and the boaters who want to go out.
There'll be a lot of trout fishermen, blackfish fishermen, and all that would be very excited about
Absolutely.
That launch
now,
that by Cedar Point.
If you're red snapper fishing, people have started to change their habits. You don't have to be there at 5 o'clock in the morning and fight for that ramp and that parking spot. Kind of come when it works well for you. You know, if your kids like to sleep in, let them sleep in and come a little later. And we've seen that change where there's a more consistent flow at the boat ramps instead of this ridiculous flow first thing in the morning. Go when it works well for you, and I think you'll see that it works better for you.
Get back to Billy Goat Hole, the Big Billy Goat Hole. So they're going to cut trees out of the medium.
They're going to be on the on the side of the, it's the north edge of the road right there where the trailers are backing in right
there's,
now.
There's a couple I'm thinking of in particular. If you get there early enough, right, to be able to back in there, there's some pine trees that I know these things well.
Yes. And I know what you're talking about,
too. They bear the scars of more than one trailer.
Yeah.
But there's not going to be any trees cut out of the median?
Not out of the median, no, sir.
Okay. All right. Just want to make sure I understand that.
And I think once you see that it's groomed, and because remember, anytime you put some sort of obstacle in the way, people they have a tendency to stay further away from
correct.
The obstacle.
Correct, and so. It starts. Hallelujah, preach!
Yeah,
choir, can y'all sing? Because that's what happens, and it starts this chain effect. You know, I don't know how you do it because I don't want to pave over the earth. I like grass and dirt and stuff like that. But some way to define that these are the parking areas too, because people. If left to their own devices, I mean, a lot of people are conscientious. People say I'm OCD about it, trying to make sure that I give them room to get out, but also maximize the parking. But if you don't, you start taking an extra, somebody takes an extra 3 feet, and then the person next to them takes 3 feet. By the time you're three trucks down, you've lost a spot. Yeah, you lost a spot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to draw out some parking plans, and we're going to have some discussions. Once it's cleared, we're going to survey it and look at some different methods. And it might be just as simple as putting the parking bumpers out there to kind of guide you to, you need to back up to this. And so the good thing is, in that particular spot, outside of those trees, most people really do a pretty good job there. It's kind of impressive sometimes. I watched a guy back his little trailer between two vehicles and angled it to get around the tree. It was pretty amazing. I wanted to stop and just shake his hand, say that was probably one of the finer trailer backings I've seen. He got in there, and he didn't have to walk very far. So,
no, well done. All right, coming right back, more of our conversation with Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, is our guest. Speaking of parking, parking trailers at launches, got to go check out the Facebook, but we'll talk about it, we'll get back. But if you go to Alabama Marine Resources Facebook page, they show you some do's and don'ts.
Yeah.
Really more don'ts.
Yeah, a lot more don'ts.
Be right back.
Yeah.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. In our conversation with Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. If y'all hadn't heard, snapper season opens on the 27th, and I guess we didn't even address that either. We're still on the 4 days.
4 day weekend, Friday through Monday.
Yep.
And the federal for hire season will open June 1st, and that's a 7 day week where you go on the typical charter boats, and it's going to be a 79 day season until August 19th of this year.
But the Sean Sullivan and Company 25-foot boat recreational world.
4 day weekends until we tell you to stop. So don't text me, don't email me, don't call me.
Have I ever done that?
Scott Bannon didn't say stop, then you get to keep fishing all those 4 day weekends.
Yeah, I'm hurt that you would ever intimate that I would call you and ask how many.
Oh,
more
I'm not saying you.
You're
not alone in that. I get that one quite a bit because when people. They're fishing. They're thinking, my gosh, I think it should be closed. And said, but I haven't heard anything. Then it's not closed. So,
yeah.
And I don't mind answering those calls and texts. I love sharing information with people.
Well, hopefully we can make it through the rodeo again this year.
I think so.
I really hope that because people just love to. Well, I wish that Amberjack would come back for the rodeo too. That was two things that people really loved to fish for during the rodeo was Amberjack, snapper.
Correct.
But at least maybe we have snapper this year.
I want to, before we wrap up here, too, I mentioned as we went into the break, Alabama Marine Resources Division Facebook page. So I guess you look for Alabama Marine. It'll fill it in on Facebook if y'all aren't already following it. I like this. I like this pictorial on what not to do with parking your trucks and trailers.
And you may think that we staged all of those pictures.
I kinda did.
We did not. Those are all true events. At the state-owned boat ramps such as Cotton Bayou, Boggy Point, Fort Morgan, if you do this, you can get a parking ticket or you can get towed. And at Cotton Bayou, we tow people on a regular basis, several vehicles a week. Do not park a single vehicle in a trailer parking spot. Do not park where there are not designated parking spots at those because it blocks people in, it causes problems, and the only way to fix that is to tow them. Now, we don't want to do that, but that's it becomes a necessity.
Oh, wouldn't that be bad? You've been fishing all day, come back, and man, my truck and trailer's gone. What? I just parked in the middle of the road over there. Didn't hurt anything.
Y'all go look at one of my favorites. There's a truck and trailer that is it's parked on the road, heading against the direction of traffic in a turn lane. It's a beautiful moment.
And
I
promise you, they will shrug their shoulders and look at you and say, "What? I don't understand." Yeah. And that's obviously.
Single vehicles blocking in people and all that. All right, y'all check that out on the page. Well, great. We will obviously be talking throughout the season and getting updates. And next time, which should be soon, I do want to talk about what we mentioned at the beginning, that things are looking good in the inshore world as well. So more of that conversation coming up. And I guess, folks, once again, if they don't have the app, tell them what to go do.
Go to OutdoorAlabama.com or go to the App Store and go to look for Outdoor Alabama. You'll see a big OA and a blue background. That's the correct app. And there will be information there. And if you want to know the fish sizes and limits and seasons, use the Fish Rules app. It's a free app, and we fully support that. They're very helpful to us. And I want to encourage everybody to be safe, be smart, and please remember those that have fallen before us for Memorial Day.
Absolutely.
It is Memorial Day, and we want to remember that.
Well said. Scott Bannon, our guest, and we'll be back next week.